Today, one of a very important day where the two principal leaders are expected to meet in Juba. This has been going on for a very long time. They are expected to meet. It hasn't been happening. And today is the day you're joining us in the studio. Do I expected to meet? Let's just begin with that first. What do you think about this particular meeting of the two leaders?
I think it's a hugely significant step, and it's one that we in the international community have been calling for some time. I think we saw during the negotiation of the RARCSS last year that it really required the intervention of the senior leadership of the parties to find the compromises that were necessary for the signing of the agreement. And it feels like we've got to that point again now, that there needs to be senior level compromises made in order to ensure that the transitional government of national unity that is anticipated in the peace agreement starts on the 12th of November. And, you know, listening to your previous speakers, they are absolutely right. That is what the international community wants to see.
Right. Yes, and Chris, very soon we'll be commemorating a year since South Sudan peace agreement was initialed by parties in Khartoum. 1 year down the road, are you optimistic about the progress of the implementation?
I think we should all be optimistic about the prospects of peace in this country. I think that your previous speakers, again, were right. I think there is absolutely an expectation amongst ordinary South Sudanese people that this time the elite will deliver on the peace agreement. And as the political commentator was saying, there is no such thing as a perfect peace agreement. What you do is you reach an agreement, and then with political will, you build on it to deliver peace. And that's what I really hope we will see today. Although I should say that I don't anticipate perhaps today being enough. And what we're really looking for is a commitment from the leaders to engage now in a dialogue, an ongoing dialogue between now and the 12th of November, when the transitional government stands up, to resolve the outstanding issues, which some of which are quite complicated.
And what could you like to see them discuss really today and come to an agreement for peace in South Sudan?
I mean, you know, everybody knows what the outstanding issues are. I mean, in ideal world, it would be great if they could resolve some of those outstanding issues. But even if they can't do that straight away and it requires a negotiation, what would be really encouraging would be to see them committing to regular dialogue between the two of them over the next couple of months, because I think that will give people a reason to be hopeful that they are committed to delivering on the agreement.
Right. And Chris, recently you called on South Sudanese leaders to look for ways of unity rather than splitting, and this face-to-face meeting comes in handy. So with less than 3 months to the formation of this government, what would your message to the stakeholders be, the government and other parties to the agreement?
My message to the stakeholders remains the same, that we are ready to support you in implementing this peace agreement. And I was very pleased that we were called, the Troika ambassadors and one or two others, were called to see the NPTC chair yesterday to be briefed on what's coming up. I think this is a very significant demonstration of a recognition that we, the international community, can play a really significant role in supporting this process as it moves forward. And we are committed to do so.
All right. And Chris, you're not new to the region. You've been in the region for quite a lot of time and involved with the peace process in South Sudan. What's your overall perspective about the process?
I am committed to the process. I understand how people's roles fit into the process. I feel that we have arrived at a place where we need to recognize real progress has been made. Over the last year, we have seen a reduction in the fighting. We are seeing different bits of the different political parties working together. The one thing that I would like to see more of is I would like to see more involvement by the media and civil society in disseminating this agreement, giving them the space to be able to talk about it. And ultimately, as envisaged in the agreement, there is an expectation that the civil society, the people for whom this peace agreement has been signed, should be able to hold their leaders accountable for the commitments that they make in that agreement. And I hope that we will start to see this now as this negotiation moves forward.
Right. Now, last week you had a chance to sit with President Kiir to review the UK's extensive support to the people of South Sudan and its commitment to helping secure the peace South Sudan richly deserves. Just tell us some of the issues that came out of this meeting.
This is something that is really exciting for me personally, because I was always focused on the peace agreement, but now I am here representing the whole of the British government, and I'm able to talk to His Excellency the President and your listeners about the wide range of stuff that the UK is doing here. So we are supporting, through our health pool fund, 800 clinics across the country. So in the last 5 years, there have been 9 million doctor consultations supported by the UK here. Nearly 400,000 girls have gone through primary school with our support, and we have just signed an agreement to continue and to raise the level of our support so that we support girls in secondary school as well. And I don't speak Arabic, and I'm sorry about that, but my understanding of the advert before we came on air just now was about Ebola. And Ebola is one of the key things that the UK government has been very keen to see addressed here in South Sudan, because the only way you can defeat an Ebola outbreak is by preparing for it beforehand. And so we've worked very closely with the central government. We've worked very closely with the UN agencies and NGOs to try and ensure that South Sudan is ready for an Ebola outbreak. I mean, God forbid that one should come here.
Indeed.
And what we really want to now see is that kind of coordination spread into the states.
Right. So has the UK been providing support to other stakeholders like civil society, women and youth groups to promote peace?
Yes, we work closely with civil society. We work with youth groups. We've done some work recently on media freedom. So we invited a group of journalists and a representative of the Media Authority to go to a big conference that we had in London on media freedom. So we are keen to work with all the stakeholders in the peace agreement. And we're particularly keen right now to see the parties live up to their commitment of 35% women in the positions across at every level in the new transitional government that stood up in a couple of months' time.
All right, let's come back and talk about the meeting of these particular principals today. President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar are expected to meet. As you heard from earlier from the political commentator there, he said one of the most important thing is the political will from these particular leaders. Knowing these two leaders who have worked together before, who tried to work together and fail again, and now they're trying another time to work together. Do you see the political will? Do you see that these two can actually work together for the peace in the country?
I think there is no choice. That is what they have committed to in the peace agreement. We need to help sort of encourage and support that process. But I think that if they talk to their constituents, if they talk to people on the street in Juba, as we do, they will hear that everybody expects them to deliver it. And I think the expectation of people here and the expectation of the international community that there will now be peace in South Sudan is something that I hope will encourage them to ensure that they arrive at the compromises necessary here.
Yes, as the River Thales peace agreement was signed, immediately the international community, the UK inclusive, were a little hesitant in supporting immediately. They said, well, we're going to support you, but we need to see tangible results. We need to see that you are committed first before we come in to support. Do you see this commitment now? Are you now willing to, you know, push money when it comes to cantonment sites and all those?
I mean, I think, yes, I was at the meeting on the 12th of September last year, and we did say that we were happy to see a peace agreement signed, but we wanted to see demonstration of a commitment. Some of the things that we called for, we have absolutely seen. So we've seen a reduction in the fighting. We've seen greater humanitarian access for the NGOs and the international community to provide support. We still haven't seen as much media freedom as we would have liked. We still hear about political prisoners. So there are gestures that still could be made. I have to say, on the question of money, I really don't think that there is a need for the international community to provide money. What we have called for is we've called for South Sudanese resources to be invested in the peace process. And I'm afraid we were rather disappointed by the budget a couple of weeks ago, because rather than investing in the peace process, there was a load of other things in the budget that were funded, and the peace process seemed to fall away a little bit. And what we would want to do is to urge the government to use the resources of South Sudan, invest the resources of South Sudan in the peace process.
Is that a diplomatic way of saying we're not giving you money, fund your agreement?
No, I mean, obviously, we're open to an ongoing discussion. We will continue to talk about it. I mean, we are committing over $100 million, maybe nearly $130 million a year to South Sudan and to the support of people in South Sudan.
Humanitarian, you mean?
Yeah, and when we saw, no, not just humanitarian, I mean the education, the health, livelihoods. And, you know, when you see that the budget has got 1% of its allocation to health and 6% to education, you know, if that was balanced with an investment in the peace process, then we could we would be happy to continue to support South Sudan through health and education. And we are. That's our commitment.
Now, the NPTC has called for support in the, you know, as they establish the cantonment areas. Out of the $100 million budget they have, they got like almost 30 that has been provided by the government. Now, how is your government helping in here? Are you trying? Will you come here to help? Or
well, I think that if we saw the release of all that $100 million, we wouldn't need to provide funding to the cantonment process. What we are looking to do is to try and find ways to provide technical support, to provide advice. And my colleague, the defense attaché, attends some of the boards as an observer, offering to help share his experience, because we have a lot of experience in security sector reform, in DDR, those sorts of things. And those conversations, I think, should be going on and are starting. So it's not just about providing money.
It's 2 months to the formation, to the date of the formation of the transitional government of national unity. The leaders are meeting today. Do you see the deadline being met? Will it be met, actually?
I mean, none of us are talking about an alternative to the deadline being met. And, you know, if there is a dialogue between the principals, you could imagine a situation where not every single letter of the pre-transitional agreement has been met, but they are in the process of meeting it, and so they then agree that it is now time for the transitional government to stand up. So this is why the dialogue is so important, because if they're talking and they're building confidence and everybody is feeling more confident, then you could say, all right, after the 12th of November, we're going to continue this discussion. But let's just move into this new era of the revitalized transitional government. And this is what we're calling for, because the international community stands ready to deepen its relationship with the new transitional government and to work to ensure that over the three-year transition period, the aspirations of the people of South Sudan for peace are met.
All right, Chris, just before you go, what will be your final remarks?
I think that people should have hope. And I think that people should encourage their political leaders to move forward in this process. And some of this will be quite nerve-wracking for them. They will need to take risks to make compromises. But everybody should be supportive of them to ensure that they can deliver what they need to deliver, which is peace and a transitional government on the 12th of November.